It's the first day of spring, and this year Mother Nature and the calendar seem to be in agreement. The grass is starting to turn green, but maybe your lawn isn't following suit. This hour, spring lawn care. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowa State University horticulture professor and turf grass expert Nick Christians will be here today. We'll talk about what you should be doing to care for your lawn as that first flush of green spreads across the landscape. ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Nick will answer your questions about your lawn and garden. 866-780-9100. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Happy first day of spring today. It's time to get outside and get to work. And in a few minutes, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be here to answer your questions. But first, we're going to talk about spring lawn care with ISU horticulture professor and turf grass expert Nick Christians. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Charity.
Welcome back to the show. Yep. Well, now that the landscape is just starting to turn green, what kinds of opportunities do we have right now for working on our lawn that we may not have later on in the season?
Well, raking and that sort of thing to get the debris off, but we're still a little early. The main questions that I get now in mid-March have to do with seeding. I've got some bare spots or I want to, you know, a new construction. Is it time to seed? And clearly the answer to that is no, it's still too early. A common mistake that people make is to they want to get going quickly in the spring. They'll go down and buy seed, put it out, and nothing happens because the soil's too cool. And that's where we're at now. It'll be well into April before the ryegrasses germinate and well into May before the bluegrasses will germinate. So don't push that too hard. You give yourself a little time.
All right. So cool your heels for a little while. Is seeding in the spring a good idea?
Is it a good idea? It kind of depends on the situation. It's a very hard time to get lawns going. A far better time is the middle of August. So when people call me and say, when should I plan to seed? I'll say set August 15 as your target date. That's by far the best. The problem with spring seeding is the cool soils, first of all. It takes a long time for it to get going. And then crabgrass and other annuals begin to crowd out your new seeding. So spring seeding is tends to be very difficult.
All right. Of course, a lot of us have some bare spots in the spring, so it just becomes necessary. Obviously wait a little while. Are there other tricks that you can give us to help us succeed if we do need to seed in the spring?
There are other concerns. The standard application in the spring is a fertilizer and pre-emergence herbicide application, and that we're still a little early for that, although you can go out fairly early with that. I tell people to shoot for mid-April on that. However, the catch there with seeding is that those pre-emergence herbicides, almost all of them, will kill the bluegrass, the rye, the fescues, along with the crabgrass. So you can't put down the pre-emergent and seed. If you don't put down the pre-emerge, you'll seed and the crabgrass will come up. So you kind of get caught in a bind in the spring.
All right. Well, let's talk about pre-emergence opportunities because, obviously a lot of people know that they have weeds in their lawn or had weeds in their lawn last year and would like to prevent that from happening this year. What kind of recommendations do you have for that?
There are a number of good homeowner products that you can get at any of the garden stores or the big box stores that contain high quality fertilizers and pre-emergence herbicides. So you can do it yourself. The other option is to have a professional do it and to get a lawn care company to do it, which is also a good option. Obviously, you would save money if you know how to do it yourself.
All right. Now, of course, a lot of people have concerns about the chemicals that are in some of these pre-emergence treatments. What about trying to minimize that kind of impact?
Well, of course, as we've talked about before in this program, I have worked with natural products, one called corn gluten meal, which can be used as a natural pre-emerge, and that is available, and that is a natural product that's much safer. It's not going to work as well or as fast as the chemical pre-emerges, and it's going to be much more expensive. So the pre-emergence herbicides, for the most part, tend to be quite safe. You wouldn't want to eat them. You do want to wear gloves and that sort of thing and boots, but they tend to be quite safe to humans.
All right. And do you need to take a good look at the weather forecast before you do anything?
Well, if you get a break in the rain, you want these products watered in. So rain right afterwards with the pre-emergence herbicides is a good idea. Now, the broadleaf herbicides, we'll talk about that a little bit later because we do that in the fall generally. Where we're going to control dandelions and things like that, there you do have to be very concerned about weather. You don't want to put those on and have it rain right afterwards. But the pre-emergence herbicides, it's actually good if you put them down and get rain within 24 hours.
All right. Now, you talked about raking, clearing some of the debris. Is that important?
Is that critical? It's definitely a cosmetic thing. The area looks better. You feel better going into the spring. From an agronomic standpoint, and there's been research on this where they've removed debris like that and done other cultural practices and then left areas where they didn't. It's fine to leave that debris there. It'll generally break down just fine in the spring. But it does look better if you clean it up.
All right. And how long do we get to wait before we actually break out the lawnmowers? When is your recommendation for
starting?
Well,
when it starts growing. So that's going to vary by weather conditions. It'll be into April. The rule of thumb is not to remove more than about one-third of the tissue in a single mowing. So if I'm going to mow at 2 inches on my Kentucky bluegrass lawn, I would let it get up to 3, and then I'd mow it back to 2. So it depends on the weather conditions. But it'll by April, we'll start doing some mowing.
All right. Which, April's awfully soon.
Yeah, April is soon. It's
going to
catch up with us quickly.
I was thinking about that this morning. I can't believe how deep into March we are. With some of your older, more established lawns, if you are trying to introduce maybe a lusher, greener lawn, let's talk about overseeding. How do you make that work?
Generally, I don't recommend that. Depending, there's a lot of different situations out there. But let's say you've got an older Kentucky bluegrass lawn that hasn't received any fertilizer or pre-emergence herbicide or anything for a number of years and it's thin. My first choice would not be overseeding. My first choice would be to apply a good fertilizer to it. Now, you don't want to overdo that. You got to go at the recommended rate that you see on the bag. But fertilizer will often thicken that up just fine. The bluegrass has a rhizome system underground, which will thicken it up. And generally speaking, unless you've got big bare spots, you don't need seed in that.
All right. Well, let's talk about alternatives. I mean, we've talked about in the past how Kentucky bluegrass may not be the best choice for lawns in Iowa. Do you see any movement? Are there changes as far as what people are planting?
No big changes. Blue rye is kind of a standard because the ryegrass comes up quickly, but bluegrass is still your best bet. We just completed a big trial, a multi-state trial, looking at this very issue. Are there other alternative species? And we tried all sorts of unusual grasses, and it came down to the old standards were still the best. The fine fescues in the shade, the bluegrasses, tall fescue does a good job, but we couldn't, of all the unusual species we tried, we could not find anything better than good old Kentucky bluegrass.
All right. Now, one of the first flowers that we see in the springtime are the flowers on Creeping Charlie. Is there anything we should be doing if we don't want Creeping Charlie in our lawns? I know the bees love it.
It's Creeping Charlie is probably the most difficult broadleaf weed that we deal with. The time to get rid of that is in the late fall. Now, I did some research projects on this a few years ago. Spring applications of broadleaf post-emergence herbicides don't tend to work very well in Creeping Charlie or a lot of other weeds for that matter. Two, they present a lot of risk to other landscape plants. The other dicots in the environment, trees and shrubs and flowers later on, are very susceptible to those herbicides. So we try to stay away from those in the spring. I then did a study with the Creeping Charlie where I applied the standard herbicides every 2 weeks starting in September, and I went clear into December with that. And each different plots, one plot would be October 15 and another plot November 10. Anyway, the net result of that was the later I went, the better luck I had with the Creeping Charlie. It was even my December applications that year. While it didn't look in December like I was getting any control in the spring, those tended to be the best treatments.
All right. Well, and we've talked a lot on this show about pollinators and the need for sources for food. Of course, a lot of people who are protecting pollinators and encouraging the protection of pollinators are encouraging people to leave more weeds in their lawns to let the dandelions grow and things like that. Do you see any kind of a change in culture in how we care for our lawns?
Not really. And this, I hear a lot of this stuff. And up in Canada, they've had some changes in laws that allowed for the banning of these pesticides. And there was a big movement on this, and then all of a sudden people noticed that their lawns were full of weeds, and then they wanted to do something. So now they're kind of going back the other direction. Most people will allow the pollinators to feed on flowers around their area, and they want to keep them out of the lawn.
All right. Now, something that we hear on this show a lot are people who want to know how to get something growing in a shady area of their lawn, underneath a tree or wherever. What are your best recommendations for a shade-tolerant lawn?
Okay. First of all, not bluegrass. That bluegrass does just about everything. It's got everything going for it except shade. And that's a big problem. And this is a particular problem in newer construction where they lay bluegrass sod under trees. Most of the sod you're going to get is going to be primarily Kentucky bluegrass. The species you need in the shade are the fine fescues. And they, if you go to a garden store and you buy a shade mix, you'll see it's primarily fine fescues with a few of the more shade-adapted bluegrasses. Really, there's no shade-adapted bluegrass, but some are a little better than the others. So it's the fine fescues, and that means some reseeding in those shaded areas.
All right. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes to talk about lawn care and your garden and all of the plants in your life. You can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've already got a couple of email questions piling up here. My guests today are Iowa State University horticulture professor and turf grass expert Nick Christians. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron will be joining the program in just a moment. And if you would like to attend Horticulture Day in person next Wednesday, the 25th, we're going to be having an open house at Ryman Gardens in Ames. We'll do a Hort Day conversation live at the gardens, and you'll get to ask questions, meet people, and see the gardens. You can find out more information at iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today on this first day of spring. With me, Iowa State University horticulture professor and turfgrass expert Nick Christians, and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron is joining us now. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And we'll dive in with an email question from Anne in Cedar Rapids. She says, last fall, I started to remove three burning bushes near a woodland because I'm concerned about their invasive tendencies. I cut all the stems down to about 6-inch stumps, but didn't get the roots grubbed out before winter. This spring, I want to dig out the roots so I can replant with shrubs that will support pollinators. My question is whether the burning bushes may resprout even if I dig out as many of the roots as I can, or would it be a good idea to apply some Roundup to the stumps first and allow some time for it to be taken down to the roots? If I do apply Roundup, how long should I allow it to work before digging?
I think if you actually dig up the base of the plant, including the stump, I don't think they're going to sprout from their roots. So if you get the main part of the stump, I think you'll be fine.
All right. Let's go to the phones now. 866-780-9100. John is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I a volunteer at my church, and for our Earth Day service, we want to hand out kind of a seed starting kit for people to help save the monarch butterflies, provide habitat and milkweed for them. So I'm trying to figure out what's the best way to have a whole bunch of people like that start milkweed from seed. We considered like trying to make seed bombs or something, but then I read maybe it's better to sprout them first. And the service is going to be on April 26th, so I'm just trying to figure out what would be the right way to get them started.
Well, what you might want to do possibly is get some seedlings, possibly from a nursery. I think that would be the best way of doing it. There are a number of companies that specialize in native plants in the area, and that might be an option where you get maybe a flat or a large number of small seedlings.
Except, do you already have the seeds, John?
No, but I don't know. I'm worried about, the cost is also a thing. We're trying to make it real cheap and maybe kind of make it a project for kids, too. So one idea was to get egg cartons and do it that way.
Okay. Well, you might want to go to their websites, see what they charge for both their seeds and their plants, and go from there. But as far as companies, I would look at Ion Exchange, which is in Harpers Ferry, Iowa, Northeast Iowa, Ion Exchange, Prairie Moon Nursery in Minnesota, and they have various species of milkweed. I think they have both seeds and plants or seedlings.
Right.
Also, the Prairie Nursery in Westfield, Wisconsin.
Right.
So those are some of the area companies that specialize in native plants and see what they have. It's going to be kind of hard to grow them in, I think, egg cartons. I think it'd be easier to grow them in a flat or directly outdoors in the ground.
Giving out the seeds is very reasonable? Or is it April 26th? Is that the right time of year to plant the seeds?
Well, it depends upon your species of milkweed. Most of your perennial-type milkweeds germinate better if they're exposed to some cool weather or cool temperatures for a while. That kind of encourages germination. It can be difficult to grow them from seeds. But also they don't transplant very well. So I think an egg carton probably wouldn't be the best thing to start them in. Possibly some peat pots would be better. They're larger typically, and you put the whole thing in the ground when they actually are planted. So you might want to consider that. But I would also look at the seedlings if cost is reasonable. Because that would be, as far as the success, that would be much higher.
All right. Well, good luck, John. What a great idea.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I hope you can make it work. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Aaron is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Reason I'm calling is I'm a stormwater engineer, and one of the newer tools on our palette for promoting infiltration and improving water quality is native turf, using short warm season grasses like blue grama and buffalo. And I was just wondering if your panelists had any comments on how to get those started and general growing in general.
Okay, yeah, this is Nick. I've done a lot of work with each of those species over the years. The grasses that we use are divided into warm season and cool season, as you've referred to. The bluegrasses, the ryes, the fescues are cool season, and they are best seeded late in the summer. August 15 is the date I choose for that. And they'll come up the best at that time of the year. While the warm seasons, like the grama and the buffalo grass and things like this, we do much better if you seed them early. And by early, I mean the end of May, the early part of June. That is just prior to their best growing period, and that's your best time for those. Don't try to seed those in the fall. They won't come up.
I've heard in general people say they're kind of hard to get established. Any tips there?
We can get them to come in quicker, but in rough areas like you're talking about, they will be slow. They do respond to fertilizer. That's a question we often get. Should I fertilize these to bring them in? The problem with fertilizing them is that you're also fertilizing the weeds. So you end up with kind of a weedy mess when you do that. So I would just be patient. I would seed those in the spring, give them a couple of years to really get established.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Aaron. And next, let's go to Don in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Don.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. I have a question about a tree and its effect on the house. I have a locust tree that has a number of dead branches from Imperialis, and it's been 3 years. And the roof below it is quite heavily stained and quite a bit of what appears to be mildew. Could that be exacerbated or made worse by the tree, or am I just experiencing normal?
Okay, so you're seeing mildew on the house?
I have mildew on the house. But this is on the asphalt roof.
Okay. I think that's more due to environmental conditions, maybe shading, dampness, moisture, that type of thing, as far as why it's on the roof. It could be there. It would be there if it were a different tree. So I don't think there's any correlation there between the damage to the honey locust and the mildew.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Don.
Let me add a little bit to that. I had a similar experience on my house on the north side a couple of years ago, mildew forming on asphalt shingles. I went to Lowe's, and they had a product, a hose-end applicator with a natural product in it that worked surprisingly well. I made one application on that, and that has held that down for 2 years.
All right. Great tip. Thanks a lot. Next up, let's talk to Shirley in Webster City. Hi, Shirley.
Hi there. My question is, I planted a snow crab in October last year, and I watered it religiously an inch every 2 or 3 days, and it got planted later than I thought it was going to, but I'm wondering how soon do I need to start watering again? I haven't even gotten my hoses out because I don't trust it until March is over. So what's your advice about watering that tree?
I wouldn't worry till maybe at the earliest mid-April.
Oh, okay.
So if the weather stays dry between now and then, mm-hmm. If we're not getting any rain, by then the ground should be nice and thawed out. At that point, you could start to water. But at this point, I wouldn't worry. Okay. The tree is still basically fully dormant. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really need a great deal of water at this point, so I wouldn't worry right now.
And then remind me again how often I need to give it that inch of water.
Well, at this point, since it was planted last fall, I would say every week to 10 days, if it doesn't rain, should be sufficient.
Okay.
And so go out there, water it really well, and then maybe come back in a week if it hasn't rained and check the soil. Is it drying out or is it still moist?
Mm-hmm. The tree doing anything?
if it's moist, then wait a few more days and come back and check again. Mm-hmm. But basically do it really well when you water it, and it should be fine for at least a week.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Shirley, thanks a lot for your call. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and ISU horticulture professor Nick Christians. The number to call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Don is up next in Des Moines. Hi, Don.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is about mountain ash, and I was wondering why I heard on your program once you didn't recommend them for Iowa.
Right. Well, the reason is that they're perfectly cold hardy. That's not the issue. And with most plants, that is the issue in Iowa. But the mountain ash does not like our hot, humid summers. It just doesn't like that. And so what happens is you plant it. It does okay for a few years, and then the weather begins to catch up with it, and it starts to decline and eventually die. So most mountain ash typically die within like 10 or 15 years. They would do much better, let's say, in central and northern Minnesota, central and northern Wisconsin, where the summers are cooler and not as dry. That's what they really don't like, is the hot, dry, humid summers here in Iowa.
But I do remember in the past seeing them planted here in Des Moines, and now I see none. And so if you were willing to put up with their short life, you would still have them with berries, right?
Right. I have seen them in Iowa, too, and oftentimes they die within 10 or 15 years, and if that's okay with you, you can definitely go ahead and plant them. They probably should start bearing fruit maybe within 5 years or so, but they're going to have a short life.
Uh-huh.
And what you'd want to do is if you plant one of these is go ahead, plant them, mulch around them with like wood chips, and during any prolonged dry period, go out there and water them maybe every 10 days or so they have some moisture, so they don't have to deal with some of the stress. You can't do anything with the temperature, but if it's dry, go ahead and make sure they have some water.
And how about the pear and mountain ash hybrids? Would those be any different that I see advertised?
Yeah, I'm really not sure yet. I haven't seen those perform in Iowa, so I would be a little bit cautious on those because I'm just not sure of their hardiness.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. Let's answer a couple of email questions here. This one's from Dick in West Des Moines. I have a rhododendron that has overgrown its space. How and when should I trim it back?
Okay, They don't tolerate pruning very well, but if I was going to do that, I would do it as soon as they're done blooming. Most of those bloom in the spring, and as soon as they're done blooming, they start to leaf out, put on new growth. So as soon as they're done blooming, go ahead and prune them and try to find some buds and leave some buds still on the plant.
All right. This one's from Derek in Cedar Rapids. We have a tiger's eye sumac that some of the branches are getting long and out of control. There are two main trunks with many offshoots toward the top of the trunks. How should we prune it back, and is it too late?
You can prune it basically until it begins to leaf out. So they probably should have at least another 2-3 weeks, possibly four. As far as pruning it, that's just kind of the way they grow, as far as the growth habit may not be the best, but they do sucker a lot. And I guess if you don't really like what's there, you could cut off the main plant and allow some of the suckers to grow, and that would be perfectly fine.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Gloria is on the road today. Hi, Gloria.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Every time I go out in my garden, I have been getting chiggers. Now, this only started probably about 3 years ago. Before that, we've been in the same house, in the same garden. And now, every time I go out, I get chiggers 2 or 3 times a year. What can I do?
Well, I'm not an entomologist, and so I'm going to give you a name and a phone number.
Okay.
That would be Donald Lewis.
Donald Lewis.
Donald Lewis. He's our extension entomologist here at Iowa State.
Okay.
And his phone number is 515-294-1101. Now, I do know he's out of the office today, so I'd try next week sometime.
All right, Gloria, thanks a lot for your call, and let's try to fit in another one here before we get to the break. Robert is on the line in Tatonka. Hello, Robert. Oh, I'm sorry. Hello. We've already spoken. I apologize. Let's go to Dana in Des Moines. Hi, Dana.
Hi. I actually have two quick questions. The first one is, we're planning on transplanting some lilac bushes. They're not very big, maybe 2 foot tall, and wondered if this is the right time of year to do that.
And it is.
It is. Great. The earlier the better, or?
I'd be shooting probably for early April.
Early April. Okay.
Yeah. Let the ground firm up a little bit, and then go out there and try to dig them up with a ball of dirt around the root system. Put them right back in the ground, water them in nicely, they should be fine.
Okay, great. And then the second thing, is it too early to throw grass seed down and rake it in?
Yeah, this is Nick. It is too early yet. It'll be well into April before the soil temperatures are warm enough for the ryegrass to germinate. It'll be into May before the bluegrass will germinate. Now, is it too early? It's not too early if you're patient, but don't fall into the trap of thinking that the seed was dead and then seeding again. So my recommendation would be to wait until mid-April.
Really? Because you can frost feed.
What was that?
Because you can frost seed, right?
Oh, fall seed. Okay, a dormant seed. Well, fall seeding
I think she said frost seeding.
Oh,
is that
frost
what
seeding, which is dormant seeding. You can do that. The mortality rate is quite high on the seed, so you have to go with more seed than you normally would. I normally tell people to just leave it on the shelf until the soil temperatures are warm enough for it to germinate.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right, Dana, thanks a lot for your call. And I'm sorry, Robert in Tatanka. Now you're on the air. Robert?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, what's your question?
Okay, last spring I planted a European mountain ash, and near me there are some that the top center of the tree is dead. And I was told I need to treat mine to protect it from that. But just earlier, I heard that you don't really recommend the mountain ash in Iowa. So am I throwing good money after bad? Should I just change that tree, or how do I need to treat it, and where do I get the product?
Well, I don't think you can really treat it. How much of it has died?
Well, the one, mine is not dead.
There's okay.
I was told this is like a limb something. I can't remember the name of it in the product. And now the nursery where I deal is mm-hmm. closed for the winter. So I was, but they said I would need to treat mine to prevent it from spreading.
Well, cankers can affect the mountain ash, and they are fungi, but fungicides do not control cankers. So your best way to prevent that is to keep the plant as healthy as you can, and that would be by watering during dry periods and realizing that at some point you may lose the tree.
All right. Robert, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. My guests today, ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and horticulture professor Nick Christians. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Horticulture Day today. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and professor of horticulture at Iowa State, Nick Christians. They're here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tom is on the line next in Cumming. Hi, Tom.
Hi, you were speaking earlier about watering trees this time of year, and I wondered if that applied to conifers as well.
Yeah, I'd be mainly concerned about anything planted in the last year or two. Those trees and shrubs that are fully established, they should be fine. But anything planted in the last year or two, I would be concerned about them if the weather stays dry, but at this point, I wouldn't worry about them.
Okay, they're about 2 years old.
Yeah, so... unless we have some really prolonged dry periods, they probably should be okay. But if it hasn't rained for like 2 or 3 weeks, I'd probably water them.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. Next, Lisa in Mason City. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, I have a friend from Alaska who is going to be down here for the months of May and June. He's an Iowa native. He is very excited about experiencing a springtime. We were hoping to plant something that we would get pretty close to immediate returns on. I have a backyard that has got partial shade and areas of full sunlight, and I'm just hoping for an idea of a chunk of land we can just till up and throw something in and watch something grow.
Okay. Something edible?
We'll take what we can get, but preferably edible. He was hoping for strawberries, and everyone has told us we're overreaching.
Yeah, that's not going to happen because they shouldn't bear for at least a year.
Okay.
So, but you could plant, and he's going to be here again during what time period?
He will be here for the months of May and June.
Then I'd probably try things like maybe some lettuce,
okay,
some spinach, possibly some radishes.
Okay.
Possibly some peas. You could plant those before it gets here.
Okay.
And they should be bearing hopefully in June. So basically some of the cool season plants. And maybe some onions too, because you could use those as a green onion.
Okay. Okay, yes. He's very excited. He lives in the Aleutian Islands. This will be his first Iowa spring since 1979.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So we appreciate your guidance.
A slight difference, yes.
Right. Well, Lisa, for sure go for some nature hikes because there are so many beautiful wildflowers in May and June, too. Go find a place where you can see some bluebells.
Oh, that's a plan.
All right. Have a great time.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we've got Don on the line in Clarion. Hi, Don.
Oh, hi.
What's your question?
Well, I've got a backyard that was low, and about a year ago, well, actually about 2 years ago, I hauled in a lot of dirt and raised the backyard up about 8 inches. That was throughout the whole yard. And because of the weather conditions, I didn't get it reseeded last year like I wanted to. And so I'm trying to determine, well, because of that, what wild grass came up and it's full of weeds and stuff. But I mowed it all year. And so now that it's spring, I'm trying to figure out what to do with it so I can get a lawn started back there again.
My recommendation would be to, if you can do it, live with that and shoot for mid-August for totally renovating the area. Hit it with Roundup, kill all the existing grass and weeds, till it up, and then seed with a high-quality lawn mix. Now, a lot of times people don't want to do that. You could kill it with Roundup this spring, till it up. Your chances of success are greatly reduced with the spring seeding, and you may have to do some additional seeding in August.
Okay. So when would I apply the Roundup?
Give it 10 days or so before you till it. Actually, you can apply Roundup and seed immediately, but you want to give it a little time to translocate down into rhizomes and other underground plant parts. So I would, if I were going to go for mid-August, I would start with the Roundup application in late July. And then sometimes you miss a spot and you need to reapply. But then till it up, shoot for mid-August for your seeding.
Oh, okay. And what kind of tillage do you recommend?
Standard rototiller that'll go down 2, 3, maybe 4 inches. I'm assuming this is a relatively small area where you wouldn't use a tractor-mounted unit. You can if you don't have a rototiller, you can rent those generally.
Okay, well, that's a whole backyard, so.
You might, and then, of course, there's always landscape firms that will come in and do all this for you and prepare the ground. So that would be an option, too. But usually you can get a fairly good-sized rototiller. It'll be a big job. It'll take you some time. But that'll give you the most success.
Okay, so wait till late July, early August, apply the Roundup, and then give it a couple weeks, see how well it's doing, and then prepare the ground and start seeding, you said, around the middle of August?
About the middle of August is your key time. Now, that doesn't mean you can't go later. You can generally go well into late September, even early October, but you're going to get the best results overall from a mid-August seeding.
All right. Good luck with that, Don. Does sound like a big job. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is an email from David in Des Moines. Is it too late to trim knockout roses, and is it too early to plant potatoes?
I would say it's too early on the potatoes, maybe wait another week or 10 days on those. As far as the roses, I'd probably prune those back in early April.
Okay, so it is not too late.
Nope.
But it is too early.
Yes.
All right. this one's from Anne. When is the best time to prune red raspberries? I have an unidentified older variety that produces a light crop in June and a heavy crop in the fall. Over the summer, the canes grow very tall, bending over, and need to be tied up. I usually prune them to about 2 feet tall in November, but last fall, the weather stayed warm into November, still making berries, and then we got the sudden cold and snow, so I hesitated to prune them. What's your advice?
It sounds like they're a fall-bearing red raspberry, which means they can produce a crop in June, in early summer and also late summer, early fall. What I would suggest they do is they go out sometime in the next week or two, it's not too late, and I would prune them back to the ground completely. And that way you don't get the early summer crop, but you do get the late summer, early fall crop. Maintenance is easy. The other thing I would do is that red raspberries tend to sucker quite a bit. They spread out. And try to keep those confined to a 1 to 2 foot wide hedgerow. Don't let them become a large thicket, because then it's hard to get in there to do pruning and picking and things like that. So try to keep those confined to a row as best you can.
All right, here's an email from Jen in Iowa City. I have several older bushes and small trees in my yard, burning bush, lilac, among others, that are quite tall, 6 to 8 feet, and need to be trimmed. Several of the branches are pretty thick. I'm looking for advice on shortening the bushes, not buying new ones.
Okay.
I'd like to get more leaves and flowers closer to the base of each tree or bush. Right now, leafy growth is several feet off the ground. Should I cut the branches at the base of the tree? Will new branches spring up? Any advice would be appreciated.
Okay. Well, certain plants like the common lilac, they want to grow 12 to 15 feet tall. So they're definitely not a small plant. And it's kind of hard to make something tall short when they want to be bigger. So what I would do, I think, is, especially on the burning bush, because flowers are basically not important at all on those, I would just go out there and probably select maybe 3, 4, 5 of the largest, biggest, oldest stems and try to cut those off near the ground. And that's going to reduce the size of the shrub a little bit. It's going to encourage new growth from the base. And if you want to keep it somewhat contained, do that maybe every year or every other year. As far as the lilac, I'd do the same thing, is take out some of that old growth. Now, if you do that, it's not going to bloom as much this spring. So you might want to wait until it's done blooming and then go out and maybe select 2 or 3 of the largest, oldest stems and cut those off of the ground and get rid of those.
All right. This is an email from Julie in northeastern Iowa. I have a trellis in my vegetable garden. I've planted pole beans and snap peas before, but I'd like to plant a perennial there. Would you suggest a clematis, and would I start with a seed or starter plant?
I would probably try a clematis, and specifically maybe autumn, sweet autumn clematis, because it's a very vigorous plant. It blooms typically late summer. And it's a very good, vigorous grower. It's going to cover that trellis fairly quickly.
All right.
And typically from plants, not from seed.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Here's Pam in Wheatland. Hi, Pam.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, 2 years ago when we had that really long, severe cold, first off, I live on the Wapsipinicon, and we have about a 3-acre clearing where our house sits. And around the house, we had planted yews, and they had done great.
Mm-hmm.
And they killed in that cold.
Mm.
And we were able to get them all pulled last summer. And we've been studying for a couple of years as to what we want to do. When you live in green timber all the time, you kind of want some color around your house.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking burning bush, but this lady that just called said that they were invasive. I've never had that problem in the past in other properties. What do you think she meant by that? Just the size?
Well, no. The common burning bush, it's not native to Iowa.
Okay.
It does flower. The flowers are not showy. Most people don't notice them.
Right.
They do produce a fruit.
Right.
Kind of a star-shaped fruit. And inside you have these bright orangey-red seeds that are inside. And the birds do love them. They definitely do. And then they eat the seed, they eat the fruit, and then they deposit the seed into various areas. And they sometimes do come up in woodland areas. Not nearly as badly as the honeysuckle and buckthorn, but they can come up from seed. So they can be a little invasive. Now, there is a native euonymus, our burning bush. The common name is Eastern Wahoo, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that obviously would not be a problem at all as far as planting that. It's not very common in the nursery trade. The foliage does turn kind of reddish in the fall, not as bright as the introduced burning bush, but it does turn kind of pinkish red in the fall. Now, during the wintertime, there's no real color there because they do drop their leaves in the fall of the year. So,
oh, okay.
So there really is very little winter interest there on those at all. The same with the burning bush. They're basically deciduous. So if you want something...
I remember that part.
So if you want something green during the wintertime, you basically have to plant some evergreen plants, those that retain their foliage basically all winter long. And those are typically things like pine, spruce, and fir, yew, arborvitae. We don't have too many broadleaf evergreens. We do have a few like boxwood and rhododendrons, But we don't really have a lot of broadleaf evergreens in Iowa.
All right. Well, Pam, I hope that that helps you out and gives you some options to choose from. Let's go next to Jerry in Cedar Falls. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
I have a question, three questions about hydrangeas. Should I turn them back in the spring? And would that be right now that I would do that? And will they bloom if I do that? Also, how can I transplant several and kill some that I don't want? Those three questions, all hydrangeas.
Okay. First of all, what kind of flowers do they have? Are they white, pink, or blue?
White.
They're white? Okay.
Yes.
And how big are the plants?
Well, the one right outside my window is, oh, it's probably 10 feet wide and 6 feet tall.
Okay.
It's a big one.
Okay, because there are several different types of hydrangea, and as far as pruning them, it kind of depends upon the type that you have. As far as pruning them, I'm assuming you probably have the rather common hydrangea that gets to be maybe 4 feet tall. It has a big, huge flower heads in summer. Okay. And they're basically white, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. As far as pruning those, you can do that anytime in the next 3 to 4 weeks should be fine. If it's the common hydrangea, you can actually cut them back to the ground. They should come back and bloom again by summer. As far as transplanting those, I'd probably try transplanting those in early April if you want to transplant some. And those that you don't want to deal with, you want to destroy, I basically dig them up and destroy them.
Okay. All right. I just thought that the roots, sometimes you can't get them all and they won't come back if I basically get a good percentage.
Yeah, if you get the majority of the root system, that should be it. Some plants are very vigorous and they'll come back if you leave any portion, but not hydrangeas typically.
All right, Jerry, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Bruce in LeClaire. Hi, Bruce.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question about hemlock. We have several on our property, and they are absolutely lush while we are having other evergreens die. And I thought hemlock was native to Iowa, but I never hear you recommend planting hemlock as a replacement for dying evergreens.
Well, hemlocks are, Canadian hemlocks are perfectly cold hardy. They have excellent cold hardiness. The problem is they don't like our hot, dry summers. And so if you have those, typically you want to choose a good site for them. Here on campus at Iowa State, we tend to have them in protected sites, like on the east side of buildings where it tends to be a little bit cooler and more moist. They definitely don't typically do well in windy, exposed sites because they get too hot and too dry. They do best in eastern Iowa, east of Interstate 35. In western Iowa, they don't do very good at all just because it's warmer and drier. So you have to have a pretty good site for them. If you have it, they'll do okay, but if you don't, they tend to struggle pretty badly.
I guess we have ours in good sites.
That's good because in Iowa, we don't really have that many evergreens that are reliable. It's basically things like Norway spruce, white pine, concolor fir.
All right, Bruce, thanks a lot for your call. And Richard Giron, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Nick Christians, thank you.
Thank you.
Iowa State University horticulture professor Nick Christians. Horticulture Day again next Friday, of course. And on Wednesday, March 25th, we'll be having a Horticulture Day themed open house at Ryman Gardens in Ames. The doors open at 4. We'll do a live Hort Day program starting at 5 o'clock, and you are welcome to come. So please come see us again. That's next Wednesday at Ryman Gardens in Ames, March 25th. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.